Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. I have SMA Type 2, and I am a columnist and forums director for SMANewsToday.com. Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. And joining me today is one of my colleagues from BioNews, the parent company of SMA News Today, Brandi Lewis. Brandi is a blood disorder awareness educator, TED Talk speaker, writer, and nonprofit founder from Birmingham, Alabama. She's passionate about helping others diagnosed with chronic illnesses in general and blood disorders that she will talk about today. And she will share her story about being diagnosed with PNH and aplastic anemia, which she writes about on our PNH News website. So we will provide links to all of those. But Brandi, great to have you today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited.
Absolutely. And I wanted to say, before we get started with main conversation, and Brandi actually knew her as well, but you know, for those of you who don't know, we put this out on our main website and our forums and our YouTube channel. But we sadly lost our longtime friend and contributor, Deanne Runge, recently. You can see the tribute we put out on, again, our main website and also on the YouTube channel. Michael and I made a video there. She was, you know, too much to put her legacy into words, really. And Brandi and I actually, Brandi knew her as well because I mentioned in the video and the written tribute that Deanne was part of our recently established patient advisory board at BioNews, which Brandi is also a member of. And so yeah, I just wanted to put that out there. We will be continuing to do tributes to Deanne, but I just wanted to put that out there, and we'll, you know, go look at those links if you haven't already. But yeah, I did just want to start it that way. Well, Brandi, I'm really glad to have you today. I know we've had other colleagues from mine at BioNews with different rare diseases on the show before. So if you wanted to start, tell listeners a little bit about yourself and your story and the blood disorders that you live with.
Yeah, so I was diagnosed with two blood disorders. In the beginning, I was only diagnosed with one. So I was diagnosed with aplastic anemia in 2009. So aplastic anemia is a very rare blood disorder where you're not forming enough red or white blood cells in your body. So at the time of me being diagnosed, I was a sophomore in college. So I was around 19, 20 years old when I was diagnosed. And up until that point, like, I had been very healthy. You know, I went to the doctor, but health wasn't ever anything on my mind in that way of having to worry about it. So it was definitely a shock to me and my family of being diagnosed. But I also say, like, the journey to getting diagnosed is always so hard with chronic illnesses, but for rare blood disorders or rare chronic illnesses is even tougher. So that road to actually getting that diagnosis of aplastic anemia took around 3 months. And that's actually kind of short. Most people I've heard their journey has been much, much longer. So that was a tough part also, from being, you know, very healthy, thinking that I'm still very healthy, to now being worried and scared and trying to figure out what was wrong with me. But I was thankful to get a diagnosis, get a correct diagnosis. And that's a funny story also of getting that first diagnosis. So I was in college. I was 2 weeks into my sophomore year, and I just did not feel good. Like, I woke up that morning just not feeling like myself. And it was, at that time, I didn't know it was fatigue, but it was like I was tired, but it was hard for me to explain the amount of, like, exhaustion my body was feeling. And so, you know, I traveled to different doctors trying to figure out what was wrong with me. And thankfully, I ended up actually at Children's Hospital of Alabama in Birmingham. And that was the only doctor that I could find that actually specialized in blood disorders. And she is the one that diagnosed me with aplastic anemia. So she had actually just moved to Birmingham 3 months before then. So it was a funny thing of, being in the right place at the right time, and thankfully me being able to find her just from being transferred to different doctors and then finding out about her. So that journey of being diagnosed with aplastic anemia, it was, so I took a year off of school that year, and during that year fully focused on my health. That was all I could do. There is a cure, they say, for it, but it is very hard to cure aplastic anemia or PNH. The cure is a bone marrow transplant, and you have to find a 90% to 100% match of somebody that matched with you in order for them to donate their bone marrow to you. So went on the registry during that year, couldn't find anybody. And so I have two sisters. They also check your siblings, and they were both around a 60% match for me. So we knew we couldn't use them as a donor. So we looked at other treatment options during that time. And there's a treatment option that's called ATG. It's very weird. It actually comes from, there are two different serums. There's a horse serum and a rabbit serum. It's very funny, but I actually ended up getting, I believe, the horse serum the first time. And that is what actually sent me into remission. So a year after being diagnosed, getting treatment, a year later is when I was in remission, which was amazing. But the thoughts in my head was, will this ever come back? So I ended up going back to school. Thankfully, went back to the University of North Alabama, ended up graduating there, thankfully. And also, I ended up winning my university's pageant, which was pretty cool. So before graduating, of course, I won my university's pageant and became the first Black to be known as Miss University of North Alabama. So 2011 was a really cool accomplishment. From those days of when you just feel like, I don't know how I'm going to survive this in life. Whatever I'm going through right now is just very tough. And I don't know, I don't see the end in sight. I don't see how I'm going to get out of this really sad, depressive phase in order to see the light at the end of the tunnel. So that was an amazing night for me and my family, just because of everything I had been through up until then. So I spent that year being able to travel around, do a lot of speaking events, and share my platform, which was called A Chance to Dream. So it was really going around to different elementary schools, high schools, and different other events. And I was able to talk about actually what I've been through. So that was really where that started, was me really just speaking about my story of being diagnosed with something life-threatening and how I got through that. So that was awesome. And then 6 years later, after that, I found out that I was out of remission and diagnosed again with aplastic anemia. And I just went in for a routine 6 month checkup. When I was in remission, I just had to go in the doctor's office every 6 months just to do a CBC, a complete blood count, just to make sure all my blood counts were still normal. Went in just for a normal checkup. I was feeling fine, and all of my counts had dropped. My red blood count, white blood count, platelets, hemoglobin, everything was just bottoming out. And that is when we knew that I was out of remission and diagnosed again with aplastic anemia. My doctor at the time, that's another hard thing is living with a rare blood disorder, is it's hard to find a doctor probably within your city that knows about it, specializes in it. So my doctor at the time actually was an oncologist, and she had just did her research on the side for me, as I was her only blood disorder patient that saw her. And so she was like, well, I've been doing some research, and I saw that aplastic anemia patients are sometimes also diagnosed with PNH. And she was like, I want to do this test. It's called a flow cytometry test. She was like, she literally said the words, I don't expect it to come back positive, but I want to test it so we can go ahead and just rule it out. And she said she'll call me with the results. And I ended up getting a phone call, and she said, your test is positive. So that was when I found out that I was diagnosed with two rare blood disorders. And that was a scary moment also, because in my mind, I was like, I know how to tackle one. I feel like I can tackle aplastic anemia again. I know what that story or that journey looks like. I know what's to come. But with PNH, it was the unknown again, and it was this, just the fear and the worry around how do I now treat both blood disorders at one time to put me back into remission. So it's a pretty long story. That's
No,
actually
it's
the
just,
short version of it.
I mean, it's a lot to cover. And I, well, you know, and I
Yeah.
know you're very like, well, talking a little bit about how kind of you got into advocacy as a result of everything you went through and just like, you know, becoming immersed in these communities. But before that, like when you were growing up, and you were in college before you got the initial diagnosis, like, what were kind of your big interests, goals? You know, because I'm just curious if like the kind of tools for advocacy were always in you, or if you had a completely different path you were on.
Yeah, so my when I started college, I was studying political science was my major. Professional writing, funny enough, was my minor. And so that I really was like, I had always thought I was going to be a lawyer. That was always my thing. Like, I'm going to go to law school. Like, I knew the plan for me, which is so funny to look back on now. But that was really what I wanted to do. I wanted to help people in some way, but my mom and dad have always said since I was little, like I feel like I can argue with anybody, like and come with facts. My mom, so my parents are always like, "You're going to be a lawyer." So that's really where it started for me. But I had always been interested in pageants, but I never really saw myself really going full force into pageantry. But it really helped open up a lot of doors. And funny enough, that's really where I started the platform of advocacy, honestly, was then in college.
And what were some of those initial steps like in terms of, you know, both speaking, you know, like advocacy comes in all different forms, but I know for you a lot of it was public speaking, but what was some of the first steps you took, and how did it make you feel just getting into that world?
Yeah, so the first steps I took into advocacy was really just coming up with that platform called A Chance to Dream. So that really kind of initiated everything for me because when you win your university's pageant, you start getting a lot of calls around from the people in that area. So I went to school in Florence, Alabama. So a lot of people around that area in Muscle Shoals, Florence, were they would have different events and then they would want Miss UNA to come and speak at those events. So that was really where it started. And that platform just kind of set it off for me. It was a way for me to say and explain what I'd been through and how I'd fought through that in order to come back and to still have these goals that I'd already had, always had in life. So, when I was sick the first time around, I was like, I've got to find a way to know that this is not the end. So for me, it was writing goals down. So I would write them down. Sometimes I would just look at them. I would speak them out loud of different things I wanted to do in life after being going into remission. And one of those goals was actually to win Miss UNA. Another goal was for me to graduate college. So I had these big goals. I still want to write a book. I have a lot of goals like that, but those were the things that I wrote down. And so when I went with my platform, that was how I presented it was, look, I was in a dark place at one time. I didn't know what was going to happen to me. And I was still able to accomplish this huge goal of becoming Miss University of North Alabama, which was awesome. And to be made history at my university, which is awesome to still be known as today as the first Black. That was a huge goal I set out for myself. And despite everything I've been through, I didn't let those things, make me a victim or make me feel like I can't do this because. And so I always wanted to kind of change that around. So that was really where my platform started. It was really just, I always say I just started telling my testimony, really, to be honest. That's really where what I was doing.
Sure. I mean, I think that's so much of what it is really just like, I think people can who are outside the realm of advocacy thinks that it has to be so formalized and so rigid, and you have to do so many things to get into it. But really, it's anyone can be an advocate, and particularly in our world of rare diseases and disabilities, like we are kind of thrust into it in one way or another. But a lot of it is just that, just sharing your story.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I know you also asked me how it made me feel, just to do all that. The feeling was amazing. I felt like I was telling my story, sharing that I was in some way helping someone out there. You really never know what people are going through. And so everybody's story, I feel like, helps somebody else that may be in a spot that you don't even know about. And it helps them keep moving and pushing along in life. So that feeling was probably the best feeling for me, is just knowing that in some way I was helping somebody out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know for me, like I talk a lot on this podcast and my column is the SMA community is pretty tight-knit, and like I've been around it pretty much my whole life. But like since you got your diagnosis later, and they are very rare communities, what is that like in terms of, when was the first time you interacted either in person or virtually with someone in either the PNH or the AA communities?
Yeah, so actually, my first interaction started with the foundation, AA and MDS Foundation. They do a lot of work with aplastic anemia patients, MDS patients, and then they've actually added on PNH patients as well. So that was really where I started my advocacy work with different blood disorders or blood disorders specific to mine. So I know my mom and my dad were my caregivers, so they were reaching out a lot, just trying to get any type of resources, and through them reaching out is where AA and MDS Foundation heard about my story. It's a crazy story of being diagnosed at, college and, going in remission and being Miss UNA and being diagnosed again. So they actually have followed me through that entire journey, but, them hearing about my story, they asked if I would do a video for them, and they actually like flew people out to do a video of me and my family. So that was really where I started, was really with that foundation that I'm still pretty close to today, which is awesome. But that was awesome just to see that, okay, I can do this, in the pageant world. But then after that, there were still other things that I could do. That was awesome to see, like, the advocacy work doesn't end. There's always something you can do. And like you said, like, anybody can do this. It's really just you telling your story. It doesn't have to be formal. It's just you being you and being truthful and real to whatever that story was for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And were there, like, once you started making those connections, was there anyone you really like built relationships with? And like, how did that, like, it helped to have that direct community support?
Yeah, so even through it all, there are patients that I've built relationships with. Funny enough, most of those patients, because it's so rare, you meet patients from all over. Most of those patients, I've never seen them in person to today, but we still have like a tight relationship. So a lot of the patients I've met through this journey, but also like the AA and MDS Foundation was a great one. NORD, I have a great relationship with them. I do a lot of advocacy work today with Novartis, but I've done advocacy work with Genentech, so many other pharmaceutical companies. And it really just was kind of like word of mouth. One person hear my story, and then, I did an article with Health Central, and from that article, other pharmaceutical companies read my story and wanted me to help them. So it kind of just snowballed, and me doing one thing kind of led to another. And so one thing in the back of my mind that I always have always thought of is just say yes to that possibility, because you never know where it may lead you. You never know who you're helping. But even if it's something that you're not comfortable with, for me, I've gotten used to being comfortable with the uncomfortable. And sometimes, because it's not about you, it's about you helping somebody else that may need to hear your story.
Absolutely, I love that. And speaking too about, I know you mentioned a lot of advocacy comes with, it's not as formal or rigid as you might expect, but something that probably I imagine was a little more formal and you had to prepare for, and is the reason we found you through Pioneers was through your TED talk. So can you talk about that? Because I'm just curious what that process is like. Like, how do you go about pitching one and developing and and look, we'll definitely link yours in the description, but if you can just talk about that, the story behind that and how you prepared for it.
Yeah, so that was a really cool moment for me, being able to say that I'm a TEDx speaker, which is awesome. So here in Birmingham, Alabama, they host a local TED Talk, which every major city does. So TEDx Birmingham. I just ended up going online, and somehow I found on TEDx website there was, submit your story to see if you want to speak at TEDx. And so they made you fill out this information, and the last question was, well, what will you speak on? So around this time, I had already been diagnosed in remission from aplastic anemia, and as any chronic illness that you battle, you see life completely differently, and it really just gives you a different outlook on life. I thought, okay, whatever I speak on, it has to be something that's outside the box. It has to be something that nobody has ever thought of. It's got to be a catchy title, or in some way, it has to grab their attention to even think that this may actually work. And so I remember putting in there, relationships with chronically ill patients, how to be a friend to a friend that's sick, or mine actually was centered around food and how, people don't know what to do. So they're just like, oh, somebody's sick. Let me bake them, a cake or a pie, or let me send them food. And how, food is not essentially what we need out of relationship. So from that was when I actually got an email saying, hey, we're really interested in you and your talk and what you want to speak on. And so that was really what initiated it all. And I was like, wow, okay, this actually may go somewhere. And so after scheduling and talking with the local people that were over the TEDx Birmingham, I settled on the food talk of, and so I was like, okay, how am I going to make this talk, realistic? How is it going to convey that comparison that I'm trying to convey in it? And the every local TEDx does it differently. So for the TEDx in Birmingham, the process is a 6-month process. It's different. Every city does theirs differently. So during that 6-month process, they actually partner you up with someone that may have given a TEDx talk in the past in Birmingham, or that maybe like a local writer or someone that can help you. So I was partnered with, she's actually a full-time writer today. Her name's Javasia. I was partnered with her. And so her and I teamed together to really go over my script, fine-tune it, make sure it's what it was needed to be. And so, in the beginning, sat down, I wrote out everything how I thought it should be, and then me and her would have sessions where we would edit it, or we would talk over, does this need to go here? Do we need to move it here? So that was a part of the 6-month process. And then also on top of that, so there were around, I would say, 10 to 12 of us that were speaking at TEDx Birmingham that year. And so you get to know each other during that process because you have mandatory meetings that you have to go to. And so at those meetings, it's really getting you prepared to speak on stage. It's going over the draft, editing it. It's, you're doing a mock version of this TEDx presentation in front of each other over and over and over again. And every time it's okay, let's see if you can memorize more. And I need you to memorize more because it looks so much better if it's memorized and you're standing up there confident knowing what you're talking about. So during that 6-month process, it's a lot of meetings. You have to be dedicated to it, but in the end, you really come out with an amazing talk and just a really good speech that hopefully touches anybody and everybody out there. So I actually am pretty proud of that speech just because I did a lot of back-end work that people don't really know about that goes into it. And thankfully I think people understand what I'm conveying in my TEDx talk.
And that's the thing, like you can watch like TED Talks and some are like 10 to 15 minutes, others, some are even shorter, others maybe like 20, and you're like, wow, this is such an amazing speech. Like, it's so well written and so eloquent. And like, I mean, that makes sense that there's a lot of work that goes into, because I mean, I don't think like even the best speakers just like whip out an amazing, perfectly edited like speech, like on the whim and just like do it like that. So that's really, I do not know about that, the process in terms of like who you work with and how you get it prepared and everything. That's fascinating.
It's pretty awesome. I always feel like anybody should try and give a TEDx talk because it really helps you even just with more skills of writing, speaking. It really just it helps a lot.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And then thinking about just, because I, so this has been what, a like 16-year journey for you and since your first diagnosis. So what are some of the other just like big changes in your life, like disease related or anything else, career-wise, just like where you are now and some of the other things that you've experienced in recent years?
Yeah, and that's a really good question because I have definitely made changes because of my health in a positive direction. But I was working in human resources for 8 years. I love HR. I feel like I'm really good at it. I understand it. You're balancing caring for employees while also balancing making sure the company has what it needs as well. So I enjoyed that for 8 years, but at the same time, any role in HR is stressful. It just is. Like you have a lot of work on your plate. There's always something to do. There's always a fire to put out. And so after 8 years in that career, I started, questioning myself, is this something that I want to do long term? Is this really something that I see myself doing 15 years out? Will the stress ever end? Asking myself those very important questions. And as for me, stress is a really big trigger for my blood disorder symptoms. So, like fatigue, if I am very stressed out and I go home, I am on the couch till the next day. Like I am just exhausted. And, I just knew that that wasn't a way that I wanted to keep living my life. I wanted to be able to, help. I know I would have those symptoms, but I wanted to be able to balance having those symptoms while also living life. And so a major change that I made was really moving out of HR. And so now I work at a company where I have a less stressful position, which is what I wanted, but I'm also still able to make a difference. So I work as a facilities coordinator. So I handle all of like the building maintenance, the building, anything going on in all of the buildings. But it's less stress on me, and but it also gives me the opportunity to still make a difference. Like we do like food trucks every other Friday at my job, or some way to just kind of boost the morale of employees. So I feel like in a way, I'm still have a little bit of that HR that I loved while also not working myself to the bone. So I'm thankful to have that. That was a huge career change for me. Around like a year and a half now, almost 2 years, somewhere in there. And it was a scary jump to make because I thought getting into HR that that would be where I would be for the rest of my career. But sometimes when you make big changes like that, it leads you to even more possibilities. So making that big change also led me to be able to do more of my advocacy work. Have more of that time and that flexibility to do that. So it actually has been a really good change for me, and I'm thankful I made the move, but it was very scary in the beginning.
It's hard for anyone, and I think, like, I mean, you bring up a great point about how, while a lot of us in disability and rare disease communities are very determined people, and a lot of us are really go-getters, and it's great to have that, and like to have those goals, but it's also finding that balance is really tough to preserve your health because that, I mean, I know myself included, a lot of us can get so caught up in like, oh, we can do anything, we can do all this stuff, and then we burn ourselves out, even in jobs we enjoy. And so I think like that's a really important lesson for all of us, I think, and it is. So I'm really glad you're finding that balance more.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it definitely is. It's like you said, it's hard to balance it, but once you find it, what once you find what works for you, I'll say it definitely you'll see the difference or feel the difference.
Yeah, definitely. And then what are some other things you just have going on right now? Or if you want to just kind of take us through a little bit about what like your daily life looks like. Is that something I usually ask people on this podcast and like living with SMA, what kind of a typical day of the week looks like for you?
Yeah, so typical day of the week for me during the week, it's I actually work a pretty like 7 to 3:30 schedule, which is awesome for me. So I on the weekdays, I get up pretty early to get ready for work. But that in the beginning was an adjustment. Also was just getting adjusting to a earlier schedule and just listening to my body, making sure that, I feel okay. But I'll get to work around 7, and the day's pretty normal for me as far as that. But once I say, once I get off at 3:30 and I go home, I do have a labradoodle named Milo, so I'll either take him out on the walk or try and play with him or get his energy out. So he's 3 years old, so he still has the energy of a puppy. So we're trying to still get through that, but I'll either take him out on a walk or something. I've taken up golf lately, so I was like, I need a hobby. I need something outside of work to do. So I thought, this is a good sport where I won't get injured and bruised, but I can actually learn something. It's definitely a mental sport. It's harder than it looks for sure. So sometimes I'll go out on the golf course and try and hit some balls if I can. But I've taken up that hobby lately, which has been awesome just to have something on the side to do. I also work out. So like some days when I get off work, I'll go and get a workout in. I do some cardio, but mainly weights. That has helped me with the strength and actually incorporating like working out into my schedule has helped me also just with my energy level. I definitely see a change with that, which has been great. And I don't go hardcore in the gym, but I definitely, if incorporating the weights into it has really helped with just feeling better. So that I do a part of my routine as well. So.
That's great. Yeah, no, it's absolutely. I love hearing about people's just hobbies and what they do because I know we get we're so used to talking about like our disease journeys and work and everything else, but it's like, oh, what are your outside interests? And so that's great. Yeah. And Brandy, what's something you want people to really understand about living with a chronic illness and rare disease, particularly with Rare Disease Day coming up? I know it's like a big time where it's really geared toward advocacy. And so for people outside of our worlds and outside of yours, like what's something you would really wish that just others could understand about what it's like to live with your diseases and just chronic illness in general?
One major thing I feel like with chronic illnesses, and not every chronic illness has this, but some of them are seen as like invisible illnesses. Like, I'm so used to getting like, well, you look fine, and it's like, oh, that does not help. It's hard for people to really understand it that hasn't been through it. So I always just say that, someone that's telling you their story, just listen. There could be something that you learn from it. A lot of people in my community have supported me since hearing that I was diagnosed with rare blood disorders, and they've learned. And I've hosted bone marrow drives where they've never heard about until then, and they've signed up and they've registered. They want to be a donor to help somebody out there like me. So really, there's just so much that you can learn from anybody that's been diagnosed with a chronic illness. There's a lot out there that you don't know about. And I just think there's always just something to learn. So yeah.
I love that. That's so, and no, and I think that's even people with SMA who are like still ambulatory and like their disabilities aren't as visible as someone like
Yeah.
me with type two. Like it's a conversation I have a lot, and especially with people of iOnews in different communities, it is so important to understand that not every disability and not every chronic illness is super apparent to upon first glance. It requires listening and understanding to really have any idea of, what we need and what we go through each day. So I love that. But
Yeah, that's very true.
definitely. Well, Brandy, this has been great. I really appreciate coming on today. And I know we'll put links to your column and everything in the description here, but where else can people find you or learn more about your work and your story?
Yeah, so I actually have a website. It's brandylewis.com and it's BrandyLewis.com. And all of my information is going to be on there. Yeah.
Perfect. We will definitely link that in the description. But yeah,
Awesome.
awesome. Well,
Thank you
Brady,
so
thank.
much.
Oh, thank you. This has been great. And for our listeners out there, you can hear more stories and conversations like this by subscribing to the SMA News Today podcast. You can also follow us directly on social media and on the forums, and follow our main website at smanewstoday.com for all the latest SMA news and perspectives. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. Thanks so much for listening, and we will see you next time. Take care.
The information in our flash briefings and podcasts are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to SMA News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. Discover more content that might be of interest to you at www.smanewstoday.com.